Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to talk about the 10th anniversary of fortification. So I'm going to be talking about the other health effects of folic acid and their implications for prevention. So I have no relationships to disclose. And today, I'll talk about four different aspects. One is to think about the sources of folic acid and how they affect how you interpret and describe the findings from studies. And then I'm going to talk about some potential adverse effects that have been important in the news over the last about two years. Cognition and colorectal cancer. And I'm going to talk about some potential beneficial effects that are potentially due to fortification. There are no other beneficial effects that have been proven other than, you know, lowered homocysteine and, you know, the things that Joe talked about. And then I'll talk about how to interpret the articles and some of the mistakes that people have made. So so far we've talked about, Joe talked about the folic acid from fortified staples at the bottom, you know, about 100 to 150 micrograms per day is the daily intake. A second source of folic acid in fortified foods is called ready-to-eat products or ready-to-eat cereals. They're usually breakfast cereals, and they can be voluntarily fortified by the company up to 400 micrograms per serving. And then there's folic acid from supplements, and most supplements have either 400 or 500 micrograms of folic acid in them. And so if you take more than one, then you can get 800, 1200 micrograms of folic acid from supplements. It's important to realize that for the top two that are, they also are likely to get vitamin B12, which is one of the controversies. So here are the potential adverse effects. This was a study that was published in January of 2007, and it was a study in Ann Haynes that looked at 4 years of data for 60 years and older. And as you can see in the title, the focus was on the effects of folic acid fortification. They looked at the people with the highest blood folates, the highest quintile of blood folates, and that's a very, very high level. Of these people in this highest quintile, 92% used supplements that we know also contained vitamin B12. And in that group of about 1,000, there were 42 participants who had what was called low B12 status. So it was 3% of the participants. And in these 42 individuals with low B12 status, they were shown to have cognitive impairment. And for the other 97% who had a normal B12 status, they actually had an improved cognition, and there were no effects at lower levels below the 59 nanomoles per liter. And this is a way of looking at that data. So this is a graph here's the daily intake in micrograms of folic acid. And you can see that it goes from about 120 or so up to 550. So the paper that I just talked about was focused only on this column here. So you can see that in this column that supplements provided 75% of the folic acid daily, and the ready-to-eat cereals were about 10%, and enriched cereal grain products were about 15%. So this, so you can see that supplements are really the driving force here. And if you look at this red line is the use of supplements in the lowest quintile, it's just over 10%. And in the highest quintile, it's 92%. So that all fits together. And so the previous, you go back. So this, I mean, it really isn't due to folic acid fortification. If this is true, then it's a problem of high doses of folic acid from supplements and perhaps RTEs. Now, talking about cancer, in the middle of last year, there were two articles that were published close to each other, and they it was it's one was an hypothesis that was related to when fortification started, and the other was a clinical trial trying to, using folic acid to prevent the recurrence of colorectal adenomas. And in the discussions that followed, it's become clear that folic acid has probably a dual role there. That there's you can have risk reduction, or you can have no risk reduction. There could be folic acid can prevent can help repair DNA and prevent the occurrence of cancer. But with an established cancer, high doses of folic acid can probably promote the growth of that, the growth of the cancer. From the NERSA study, they showed that if you were in the highest quintile of folate intake, that you had the lowest relative risk of having colorectal adenomas. So this is one of those papers that, again, it's a hypothesis. And remember, if you remember from the other slide, there were three time periods for folic acid fortification. There was the pre-period, which was up to about 1996. From 96 through the end of 97 was an intermediate period where fortification was starting to occur, and so some products were fortified and some were not. And then after January 1, 1998, everything was fortified. So this was a graph that was in this paper, and you can see that the rates of the occurrence of colorectal cancer are falling from 1985 down to about 1995. In 1995, there's a turn upwards. And if you look at the points for this graph, you can see that they're going this way, and then there are these three that are going back up, and then it continues to go on down. And so the hypothesis was that this was caused by fortification, even though it started before the fortification really began in the U.S. Now they just looked at from 1985 to 2002, and this is what the whole graph looks like from the SEER registry. So this black line shows the portion of the data that was shown, and it is true that there were, if you analyze that line, there are points called join points where there is a significant change, and those occurred in 1985, 86, 1995, and 1998. And this is data from California it's a little hard to read, but this is from Kaiser Permanente, and they have yearly rates of yearly average concentration of serum folates. So 94, 95, 96 through 1999. And remember, 1995 was when the the incidence of colorectal cancer went up. And these are the serum folate concentration, 12.6, 12.7, down to 11.7. And it's not until 1997 that the serum folates start to go up. You know, this is one HMO in California, but it does show that there really wasn't an increase in serum folates back in 1995 that would account for this increase. And then by 1998, it was pretty close to, you know, it was quite high. And then after 1999, this was as high as they could measure in their laboratory, so everything was greater than 20 after that. And correspondingly, this is the graph for the mortality rates from colorectal cancer over the same time period. And you can see that it's been falling steadily without any real change. And there's nothing that, you know, 4 or 5 or 10 years after that other blip that shows that there was an increase in mortality. So that blip is probably a increased use of colonoscopy that occurred around that time. This toward the end of that period was the time when we call the Katie Couric effect, where there were probably a lot of increase in use of colonoscopy because of the publicity that Katie Couric gave it when her husband died. And then finally, I'll talk about one potential beneficial effect from fortification. And it uses the same methodology as for the joint points. And this was looking at stroke mortality in Canada and the United States from 1999 to 2002. So this is what the mortality from stroke looked like. And if you look at the 1997 was really when you remember before that started the serum folate started to increase, and it seems that there might be a faster decrease after that time period. And if you do that joint point analysis, you can see that there is a significant change and an increase in how rapidly the stroke mortality is going down. And so if it had continued on along this trajectory, you know, there would have been this difference. So this occurred in both the U.S. and Canada, and the U.K. was also part of this study. And in the U.K., their rates just continued going down, and there was no change in the rate of decline like there was in the U.S. and Canada. So that's one of the potentially. Other than that, there are several other things like coronary heart disease that there have been studying for many, many years. Unfortunately, the randomized clinical trials that are done have a very low power, so they have a very, very limited ability to detect small changes. So most of them can detect about a 20% change, and even a 5% change in coronary disease mortality would be very important. And so I think people are waiting for a number of other studies to be finished and then put them all together and do a meta-analysis and take a look at that. They've already done that with stroke, and that showed that was preventative. So in the future, when you're looking at these studies, these are the questions that you want to ask. What kind of study was it? And was the use of folic acid randomized? And what was the source and the dosage of folic acid? Was it from food or was it from supplements? So the type of trial is very important. If it's a randomized controlled trial, that's the only kind of trial that you can use to say this causes something or prevents something. And other case control studies, other observational studies, cross-sectional studies like the analysis I talked about before from NHANES, you cannot get a causal relationship out of a study like that. And then other studies, case series, reports, opinions, and those have questionable validity. Now, if you're looking at whether folic acid was randomized, as I said before, the randomized clinical trials, you know, if you do that, then confounding is not a problem because the vitamin users are evenly distributed throughout the groups, but again, it has a low power to detect a difference. If it's not randomized, like in Ann Haynes or a lot of the other studies, then those people with high intake or high blood concentrations will mostly be supplement users. And these are the groups that their people concentrate on in a lot of studies. They have the low intake and low blood concentrations, the first quintile, first, second quintiles, they will be mostly non-supplement users. And we know there are differences between supplement users and non-supplement users. So there's always the potential for unmeasured confoundings in studies like this. And finally, think about the source and the dosage of the folic acid. Is it a clinical trial giving 1,000 micrograms a day? Well, that will give you a very high blood folate concentration. And remember, the supplements are not used in the developing world. So any study of this may be relevant to the United States, but it may be irrelevant for the developing world. Ready breakfast cereals have low use in the developing world, and you can, if kids are eating 2, 3, 4 bowls of cereal, you can get a large dose of folic acid from that, and this will again give you a high blood folate concentrations. But if you look at the enriched cereal grain products that Joe talked about in the beginning, at about 100 to 150 micrograms per day, it's much less than you would get otherwise. And if you go back to the original graph, the enriched cereal grain products were equal across those five quintiles. And recently, over the last 4 or 5 years, there have been 5 countries, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, the UK, and the Netherlands, that have done exhaustive reports for their national food safety organizations, considering fortification, and all of the reports have recommended mandatory fortification of either flour or flour for bread or something along those lines. And the reports you can easily find these reports on the internet. They are excellent sources of information, and they've done a very good job of really evaluating the literature. So, thank you. Yes?
Are there any studies that are pending looking at dementia or anything else that could be used
I think there. I don't know the answer to that. There's one. I guess the latest one is by Durga, that showed that folic acid was beneficial. I mean, in the randomized clinical trial literature, it's accepted that folic acid will prevent cognitive problems. The question now is whether vitamin B12 can prevent changes, and that may or may not be true, but it's not clear yet. There's not a meta-analysis planned for colorectal cancer. There have been, since the two studies last year, there have been two other randomized controlled trials that have been published. Both are negative. They show that folic acid does not prevent colorectal adenomas, but it also doesn't increase colorectal adenomas. And there are, I think there are two more that are coming out, and the UK body that is recommending fortification is waiting until those other studies come out, and they will probably do a meta-analysis. But for the heart disease, they've already published how they're going to do the meta-analysis when the other clinical trials are finished. And we'll have to wait and see what happens. But as I said earlier, the meta-analysis that was done for stroke showed that was clear that there was some effect there. We don't know how it does it or what it would be, but it's clear that there's an effect there.
Nice presentation. One thing that may not have been clear from the the presentation is that the people who had these cognitive problems in the MARI study were people who were getting supplements that had B12 in them. And they had low B12, which means they are not able to absorb B12. And my guess is that they probably are early cases of pernicious anemia. They need to be found and given B12. They are a B12 issue, not a folic acid issue. And we ought to be focusing on the fact that there are people with not enough B12. And in my view, B12 ought to be put in the flour, which would take care of part of it. And then we need to look at the people that that doesn't take care of and figure out what needs to be done to them so they don't get sick, as opposed to focusing on whether something like folic acid fortification is really a disservice to the older people who get low B12, is to be focusing on the wrong thing.
Yes?
When you talked about the strokes, didn't you talk about morbidity? Or did you talk about
mortality?
Mortality.
That was mortality. Well, I mean, this is an interesting study because it's an ecological study, but it's a special kind of ecological study because we know that the whole country was exposed to folic acid, you know, roughly at the same point in time. Everybody was being exposed, you know, to some extent. And we also had the all of the mortality data from the U.S. And Canada, so we could compare that. So it's really like a natural experiment, a population based ecological study. It's a very interesting kind of study to think about. You can do them. I think they have more power. Most people dismiss ecological studies as being worthless, and usually they are. But this is a special case, and so I think that that it's well, I've.
Did anyone look at sensitive?
There's not good. That's hard to do. I mean, can't the SEER registries? Over the years have done a pretty good job of looking at incidence and mortality from all different types of cancers, but there isn't the equivalent of that for stroke. And when we adjusted all of that mortality data for cholesterol and all the other risk factors for stroke, all those factors were getting worse during those time periods, so it didn't make it go away, which some people thought that would be the case, but it wasn't.